Time once again for our roundtable discussion about Wisconsin wildlife and nature. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Three guests back for you. The first, Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. And Dean, glad to have you with us again.
Oh, it's always good to be here, Larry. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, also president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Pat, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry.
And Tim Isley, full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. Tim, it'll be good to hear your voice again. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Larry. Thanks. Pleased to be here. Looking forward to it.
We have a lot of topics to talk about, and as you listen to these three, I hope you'll join in the conversation. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. What have you been seeing in the way of wildlife these days? On the On Point program that precedes this one just had an hour to that effect. So maybe you'd like to join in with what you've been seeing. Maybe you have a wildlife question. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's start things off by talking about yesterday's announcement that most of the parks in Wisconsin will open May 1st. What are your thoughts on that? Let's go to Pat. Pat, what do you think?
I was happy to hear that. You know, it's hard for people to sit inside after 6 weeks now. We've been under these orders, and I respect the orders, and I was a good move by the governor, a smart move. And you hope that people will, after being chased out of 44 things, was it 44 of the parks in the state forest, you know, a few weeks ago, I hope they learn something from that and go back in and be a little more responsible this time.
Yeah, I think we need to be observing the 6-foot rules, and masks, I believe, are strongly requested, things of that nature. Well, I hope you're right, Pat. Oh man, so if questions about that, please do give a call. I'm wondering about the spring hearings, the DNR spring hearings online this year. What have you heard about the results, Dean? Have you heard anything?
I checked again this morning, and they're still sifting through them, and I guess vetting the results. So nothing has been posted yet. Last week, Wednesday, they were hoping that they could have gotten them up by Monday, this past Monday, and that didn't happen, and nothing yet this morning. And I mean, I'm hearing, you know, nothing official, but I'm hearing that the Natural Resources Board questions on the deer season didn't fare very well in light of, not passing. In that sense. But I don't have anything to really go on there because they haven't been posted yet. But there's been some concern about people close to the topic asking questions about, you know, could these numbers have been massaged one way or the other by the DNR so that the Natural Resources Board would not have come looking so good on this one. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah. What were those questions? Kind of what did they deal with?
Let's see, Pat, Tim, you guys can help me out on this. One of them was whether or not we should extend the gun deer season 10 days beyond the current date, which would have essentially wiped out the muzzleloader season. One of them, there were six overall. One would have wiped out the holiday antlerless deer hunt. I think there would have been they were asking whether we should have no hunting either 2 or 5 days before the gun deer season, shut everything down during that period except for waterfowl hunting. That's three of them. Tim or Pat, do you remember the other three?
And don't forget the crossbow one. That was hot.
Oh, sure. How could I have forgotten the crossbow one? Yeah, go ahead, Pat, on that one.
Well, the other one was, you know, right now the crossbow season runs right alongside the regular archery season. And one of the questions, I think the way it was structured was to restrict crossbows to October then again after gun season, something like that. I'd have to get the specific time, but I know I heard a lot about that one.
That makes four, so there are two more.
there was one that was something about
changing the zones, getting rid of some zones, like maybe farmland, central farmland or northern farmland, northern forest, something like that. That'd be five. So there was still one more hanging out there somewhere.
Well, it'll come to us sooner or later. You know, Tim, another group that is going to online meetings is the County Deer Advisory Council.
Right.
What do you know about that?
Right. Well, the CDACs, it was interesting because of the prohibition on the in-person meetings that this year you could phone in, and you had to phone in and you could listen to what they did. And to be honest with you, Larry, I thought it was good. I have land in another county and live in Dane County. And so for me, I was able to phone in and listen to them as they discussed what some of the options were and how they were going to do things. And so I really liked that. And then also the DNR wildlife manager for the county had put a video onto the website so that you could go to that beforehand and go through the video. And so the wildlife manager is talking about the deer numbers and some of the concerns and some of the other things in the county where I have property, why there had been a problem during the summer with the, what they call blue tongue, EHD. And so he had numbers in there of a lot of the deer that had died and things. So it was really interesting for me. One of the things, of course, that you don't get over this type of thing, you don't get reactions, or we couldn't do input. So that was one of the negative things. But on the other hand, I thought it was really positive that we could listen to it and know what's going on. And from what I understand, now I think today is the last day that people can go to the website and then put in their comments, their feedback. And then starting in, I believe, next week in May is when those CDACs will be coming back and then going through the comments and talking about them and then making their actual decisions, their recommendations to the DNR. And from what I'd heard the other day, it sounded like those meetings were also going to be, again, phone-in. I don't know if people are going to have access over the phone or just to listen, so I don't know. So, I mean, there's some feedbacks, some drawbacks, because you can't ask questions, you can't get reactions, meeting face-to-face. But certainly for people who might not have been able to make the meeting or drive there, they could hear it, and I thought that was good. So also with the spring voting online, of course, and as Dean and Pat said, we don't have the results yet, and they were supposed to have been out on Monday. But I did think it went smoothly with the voting going through and looking at it. My concern, I'm a print person. I want to have paper in my hand and read it. And I'm sure that they printed those questionnaires beforehand and had a stack of them, because that was before all the coronavirus prohibitions came about. And I would like to have had that in hand. In fact, I'd like to have it in hand right now. My internet went out yesterday, so I can't go online and look at what those questions were. But I'd like to have that paper copy in my hand. And also to keep just to refer to in the future. So I wish I'd had that. But otherwise, I thought things went smoothly.
Tim Isley, Pat Durkin, and Dean Bortz, our guests today, as we have our Nature and Wildlife Writers Roundtable, spring of 2020. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Terry in Dalton has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Terry.
Yes, hello. I have a wildlife question. First of all, I'd like to say I'm a faithful reader of both of you and appreciate your publication. I normally have trouble with raccoons in my yard every spring, and they come to the bird feeders and everything else. And I live trap a number of them. Well, this year I haven't seen a one. And I talked to another fellow that lives on a river, and he usually traps about 20 a year and hasn't had a single one. And I've not seen many dead ones on the road. like normal. And I'm wondering if you know if there's anything going on with them.
Huh.
Larry, this is Dean. Could I jump in on that one?
Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
I believe it's mountain lions. Mountain lions are wiping out their raccoons. I'm just kidding.
Well, that'd be okay with me, but
I really don't. I mean, it's kind of odd that they wouldn't appear, especially if he's putting bird feed of any type. You'd think they'd be there. I really don't know why they wouldn't be there.
I don't know if it's coyotes or wolves or what.
Well, even if it was a predator of some type, they wouldn't knock them all out of there. They'd
right.
cut numbers down, but they wouldn't all be gone.
Yeah. Pat, you were going to comment?
Yeah, I have not heard anything on that. Doesn't mean it's not happening, but typically if you have something like that where it's really widespread and their numbers are really knocked down, it would take something like a disease of some sort. But I've not heard anything on that front, and it makes me think I should make some phone calls and find out if anyone else is reporting that. But that would be news to me.
Hey, Pat and Larry, Tim, I did hear this morning that a family's pug dog tested positive for coronavirus in southeastern U.S. You know, could it be that COVID-19 has hit the raccoon population in this caller's area? Again, I'm just kidding, but I mean, apparently a pug did actually test positive for coronavirus.
Yeah. Well, the coronavirus apparently started in wildlife, so it makes sense that it could transfer to pets as well. Like it does make sense. But
unlike Dean, though, I wouldn't put that out there.
No.
Well, we're throwing fire today, Tim. We're throwing fire bombs.
Well, I tell you what, for Terry, I had my daughter out. She's going to be taking her driver's test pretty soon. And so we were out on the road a lot, just driving, giving her some practice. And I think it helped the practice part of it, but we saw quite a few dead raccoons along the roadside. So at least in the area that we were driving here in southern Wisconsin, we were seeing a lot of dead raccoons on the road. So they're still here around southern parts of Wisconsin for sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. What have you got in the way of wildlife questions or comments? Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Natalie Guyette, our on-air producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're doing our Wildlife Writers Roundup for spring with Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association, and Tim Isley, full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. Questions or comments for them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Sam in West Madison couldn't stay online, but he's wondering if the panel can suggest some wildlife or nature books that we can read while we're all sequestered. And, well, maybe we can start with Tim Isley.
Well, you bet, Larry. There's a couple of them that I definitely would like to mention. I'm glad that they came in with that question. And one of them, of course, you had Buddy Huffaker on last week in Stan Temple with the Sand County Almanac. And, I mean, I believe that for everybody who lives in Wisconsin, it ought to be required to live in Wisconsin that you have a copy of a Sand County Almanac in your house. And that's always fun to read and to reread, too, because it's just such a wonderful book. But one of the new ones that's out now, and I'm reading it myself right now, is really interesting by Randy Hoffman. Randy used to be a an ecologist with the Department of Natural Resources, and he retired, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago or so, but he worked with a lot of the natural areas, and he wrote this book, When Things Happen, A Guide to the Natural Events in Wisconsin. And I think it is so good because it goes through the every month and part of the month. He knows when, in general, not specific places in Wisconsin, but in general, when things are blooming, when birds are coming back, and what birds, and things to look for. And I think it is so helpful. So I'm reading through it right now and following it as the year goes along. And he's got so many observations. Randy is a really good ecologist. And I would recommend, I think you can get it by going on to a website, you know, just Amazon and ordering it there, because it was individually published. But Randy Hoffman, When Things Happen, and that's one that I would definitely recommend.
All right, great. Pat, what about you?
Yeah, God, this is one of my favorite topics. And I could, basically, the two books I really loved that I was lucky enough to acquire when I was a kid, my grandfather had one of them. But one is called A Century of Wisconsin Deer. It's from back in the 50s. And you talk about some real rich histories by a guy named Otis Bersing, B-E-R-S-I-N-G. Now, I've never looked for these books on Amazon, but, man, if you can get a copy of them, they're really worth it. The other one is Bow and Arrow, Big Game Hunting in Wisconsin by Otis Bersing, the same time period. But these are just rich with great information on the early days of deer management in Wisconsin and how much of it was shaped by this herd that had been just basically decimated and was coming back. And then, you know, back in the 50s and 40s, they were doing things like checking. They'd go out and do surveys to see how many deer are being left behind after the hunting season, because there was different kinds of hunting structures back then. People weren't quite so... a lot of people back then really didn't care as much as we do today about shooting a deer, and then if it wasn't a buck, leaving it on the ground. They had some really disturbing results back in that era. Not just deer, but the other book that is a really cool book from a historical perspective is John Curtis's book, The Vegetation of Wisconsin, this great University of Wisconsin researcher. And so much of the information we have about Wisconsin plants really tie back to that book and what he laid down as far as what was in the state like 50 to 100 years ago in that era. So those are just some really fascinating books that I quite often, I keep them real handy in my office here, because I'm always amazed how many times you can, when we think we're hitting on something new here in Wisconsin, you go back and look in these historical books and you realize, geez, our grandfathers were working on this stuff years ago. This isn't a new problem, or this isn't a new issue.
Well, Dean Bortz, have they stolen all your books, or have you got some recommendations?
No, they stole a lot of thunder, and they have all great recommendations, but I have a couple left. Years ago, and geez, I don't even know how long ago, but a fellow by the name of Bob Wilging from Rhinelander did a column for us on the history, different historical aspects of hunting camps and hunters and stuff like that. And Bob then rolled that into a book called On the Hunt, the History of Deer Hunting in Wisconsin. And that was out in 2008. That's a great book. And it's not just a compilation of the columns that he did for us, but he expanded on those and added a few. That's a great book. And Bob has a second book then called History of Field, stories from the golden days of hunting in Wisconsin. That's a great book. So Bob has two books that are really good to read. Pat's mention of the two Otis Bersing books, a lot of history there. He's right. If you want, they talk a lot of deer management there. If you wanted to continue with deer management from a more current range of dates, I guess, there's a book that's produced by the DNR called Sandhill Whitetails, Providing New Perspective for Deer Management. It's a little, what would you say, academic maybe. It's not a easy breezy read, but there's a lot of information in there about management of deer in Wisconsin.
What's the title of that one again, Dean?
Sandhill Whitetails, Providing New Perspective for Deer Management. You'll recognize some of the names. It's John Kubiciak, Keith McCaffrey, Bill Creed, Tom Heberlein, Bishop. I don't know Bishop's first name.
Rich.
Then Robert Raleigh. So they compiled a lot of stuff there.
Those are all good. You had another one?
Yeah, I have a couple more. Then John Azaga, a well-known deer researcher from Michigan, did a lot of research up in the UP. He has four books about whitetails, and it's through the season, so it's spring, winter, fall, and summer. And so he has four books there. And then fishing-wise, I always enjoyed Larry Ramsell's compendium of muskie angling history. Always a good one. And then there's one guy, there's one, my favorite author who's has now died, but his last name is Doig, D-O-I-G, Ivan Doig. And I would start with his book called This House of Sky. And it's not directly related to hunting and fishing, but his topics and storytelling ties in with living on the earth and how that all goes about. And Ivan is just one of the best writers I've ever read. He's a ton of good books.
Well, there we've got a great, I was writing those down, but I didn't get every one. So would each of you send an email to Jill Nadeau, our producer? I know you've got her email with those titles, and we'll post them up on our website, wpr.org/Larry, so that people can, if they didn't have a pencil handy, even I had a pencil handy, I couldn't get it all down. They'll be able to go and take a look at that. I think that's well worth it.
No problem.
All right. Great. Well, let's take some calls here. Ken in Monona, it's your turn. Thanks for calling, Ken.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. My question is, we've seen all kinds of ducks, and the loons are still here, and I've still seen some mergansers. But I have not seen any of these large rafts of mud hens, coots this year. I just, complete mystery to me, because we've been looking at these for years and years and just haven't seen any this year.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have any idea on mudheads and coots? And I know what Ken is talking about. You see on Lake Monona, he's from Monona, so I'm assuming he's looking at Lake Monona a lot. And living on Lake Monona, I'd often see large flocks.
I think that, Larry, I think that that's been something that people have noticed the last few years, that they aren't seeing as many coot or mud hen, actually, as I think it's part of the rail and gallinule family, as in the past. But they usually do show up in large flocks. I don't know if it's a little bit early yet, because I am seeing, you know, mallards and of course, the divers seem to come through first, and then puddle ducks. And I'm wondering if even some of the coot will be still coming through later on yet. But it is a concern. I think that a lot of people are noticing they just aren't seeing a lot of coot, and they do usually concentrate. But I don't know if there's been – I haven't really heard that there's been any surveys of coot numbers being up or down. That I don't know.
He mentioned loons, and I can remember once with a pair of binoculars up at the Monona Terrace, where you can kind of be up a little higher and then look down on Lake Monona. At one time, about this time of the year, but a few years back, I stood there and counted 60 loons on the lake, not together, of course, but all over the lake, and there were 60 of them on Lake Monona about this time of the year. And there probably were more that I didn't see. It's really a lot. Yeah, it's amazing. I think someone else had told me once that they had counted 70 or 75 at one time. You know, they're all on their way north, and Lake Monona apparently is a good resting spot on their way. Janet in Green Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi. It's Jeanette, actually, but you're close enough.
Okay.
Since this program is about wildlife, we live on a farm, and we have a pole barn. And we have a big issue with gophers digging into that, the inside of that barn from the outside. Now, the floor of the barn is gravel over sand. So these guys get in there, and we know that's what it is, because my husband has seen one or two. And they are creating havoc in there. They dig tunnels underneath the floor, and they come up and they dig up big piles of sand, and they're just making a huge mess there. And I just wondered if you had any suggestions as to how we can keep those guys from coming in our barn.
Larry, this is Tim. I think that's probably a good question for Scott Craven, but one of the things that we built a log cabin, and when I talked to some of the naturalists, they said, you know, one of the biggest problems is some of these critters digging and getting in from underneath and then coming in underneath. And what we did is that we put hardware cloth down when the cabin was built. We took right from the bottom of the cabin, we went down about a foot, and then we went out about a foot with hardware cloth all the way around the cabin. So whether it be a gopher, whether it be another animal of some sort that was trying to dig in, they'd get to the hardware cloth and be stopped. And that's what we've done. And so far, knock on wood, it's worked. But, yeah, of course, this is already built. She would have to go in and install it. But that was the one thing that seemed to help us and keep some of those critters out.
Yeah, and you know, if Scott Craven was here right now, he'd probably say the same thing. I've heard him say that, as a matter of fact, on this program or on other programs. It is a really good way, especially making that kind of L with the hardware cloth, because if they get to the screen and then they try to go down, when they go down, they hit the L portion of the hardware cloth. But it's probably, you got a lot of work ahead of you, Janet, to do that. But if you do that, you are going to get rid of that problem, I'm pretty sure. Good luck. Thank you so much. Doug in Cazenovia, it's your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, fellas. Hey, I'm calling in to first compliment all three of these guys for their reporting and courage on talking about chronic wasting disease and the failure of our Natural Resources Board and through that DNR to really take this problem on. I'm a member of the Richland County Deer Advisory Council, and we are extremely frustrated with the lack of tools to do anything impactful to both control the disease and our deer herd here. The Conservation Congress voting shows that hunters want more done and are willing to have more tools available, yet we don't seem to be able to get that past the Natural Resources Board in one particular member, and it's particularly frustrating. And one of the things that results is we're seeing, well, obviously this year, no one, with the call-in, it was very different, but even last year we just saw fewer and fewer people being involved because they didn't feel like that their input was that important. Pat just wrote an article that was published in the National Deer Alliance that I think that everyone ought to go out and read and check out on the National Deer Alliance site about the impact of chronic wasting disease here, particularly with a landowner friend of mine south of us. And so I'd like to hear Pat's comments and Tim's comments. And again, thank you very much, Dean, for the coverage that your paper is providing.
All right. Well, Pat, let's go to you.
Yeah. What Doug's referring there to there is an article I wrote for the National Deer Alliance where I basically, the question that you hear so often from skeptics the last number of years is, if CWD is such a problem, why aren't we seeing dead deer in the woods? Well, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of effort. Have I still got you, Larry?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
I heard a click and everything went quiet. You know, you get that question, where are these deer if they're all dying? And it is not hard as a reporter to call someone and find out information from any number of people down that region who find dead deer in their property. And you can even go to the Wisconsin DNR people and ask them how many calls are you getting on people seeing dead deer or deer in their final stages wandering around listlessly, drooling, all the symptoms of CWD. So I called a man named Mike Purnell down in southern Richland County, southeastern Richland County. He and his brother own like 700 acres down there, and they in the past last year found 10 deer in the woods around them without looking real hard, and then this year they've already found 8. And Wisconsin DNR, meanwhile, has taken calls over the last 9 years for close to 1,500 reports of sick or dying deer, and I think it was like 30% of the ones they could test had CWD. So, you know, these are ongoing problems right under our nose that some people, if they don't see it themselves, firsthand, they act like it's not happening. But, you know, it doesn't take much to find people who can tell you, no, this is happening, and here's what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Tim or Dean, want to chime in as well?
Sure. Well, this is Tim. Let me make just a couple of comments. First of all, I thank Doug for, I know this gentleman has been very active with some of the dumpsters, getting people to pay for and getting dumpsters out, and he's led the charge on that, and he ought to be certainly congratulated for that. But I think I would agree, and I know Pat has an article in the newest Wisconsin Outdoor News, that I think chronic wasting disease is probably right now one of the biggest failures, that the DNR just hasn't taken a more aggressive stand. The only concerns I have, or the only reasons, are that I understand, like the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources has been a designee up until recently, and unfortunately the legislature has held out sort of a weight over the heads of secretaries. We saw what happened with the Secretary of Agriculture when Brad Pfaff was trying to make some progress regarding water pollution, and the legislature wouldn't confirm him. And so right now the secretary finally has been confirmed, and I think that's good. But I think we need to see more activism, more the people in wildlife management at the DNR. They've got to start telling the secretary that they've got to start making inroads into this, because otherwise deer hunting is just going to go down the drain. And the department, it's the Department of Natural Resources. During the previous administration, it was a Department of Business, but now it's a Department of Natural Resources, and they have got to look for the future and be more active. And so, I think Doug's concerns are right, and Pat's column is right on the head.
Dean Bortz, let's get you in there, too.
Right. Okay. So Doug mentioned tools, and that was one reason I was hoping to see if we had results posted from the spring hearing, because the Conservation Congress did ask an advisory question regarding Ernebuck. You know, would hunters support the return of Ernebuck as a potential tool in controlling deer numbers in areas where deer numbers are high and CWD is very prevalent? I was really curious to see what the response was to that. I have a feeling it's going to be, sportsmen would support that, but we don't know that yet. But that would, and the hard part about this is we don't have a lot of tools to use to control deer numbers, and Ernebuck would be one. It's somewhat painful, yes, but it did work. And not only did it work in reducing deer numbers, but for the guys who are bent on big antlers, well, it also resulted in more bucks surviving to an older age, and they did grow bigger antlers. Maybe if deer were more like turkeys and they didn't grow antlers, nobody would care as much about how this all happens.
Doug, good question. Thank you so much. Speaking of turkeys, the turkey season did start earlier this month. How's that been going so far?
I don't have any real numbers right now. I mean, I've been hearing from people saying that it's been going good, and based on, our ever-present social media and everyone posting pictures of their various hunts, it's been looking good. I know mine starts today, but I really wasn't in a big hurry to go out given the weather up here in central Wisconsin. But I don't know. It's, historically, Larry, we're at a time now the last 10 years where our numbers have come down during turkey season. The population's, stabilized at a lower level than the peak was about, I think it peaked back in about 2007, 2008, right in that time period. and now it's but still very good hunting. I don't know anyone that's complaining a whole lot about turkey hunting success or failure. It's been pretty stable now, and the people who enjoy it, they're doing pretty well, pretty consistently.
One of the things, Larry, that will be interesting when we get the results of the Conservation Congress spring hearing is that there was a question on there about moving the turkey season up. And from some of the research that I've learned from some of the other states where some of the turkey populations have gone down, they've been concerned about having the turkey season, the hunting season, too early and interrupting some of the breeding procedures of the turkeys. So I think the season right now is really good. It begins in the middle of April, and it's a 6-7-day season. And the fact we've got permits and we've got zones, it spreads hunters out basically to lower the pressure during the hunting season. And basically what we have now, I think, is a quality season. We've got a quality hunt, and that's what you want rather than having everybody out at one time as some other states do. So I think we're really fortunate to have that, and it's been really good. But I'm hoping that – I'd be very interested to see the results. I'm hoping that they don't move the season up earlier. It was pretty tough to be that first season. I was out during the first season being a landowner. I put in with landowner preference, and I was out. And I'll tell you, that opening day was in the 20 degrees and blowing, yes. And I drove in the snowstorm. And it's a lot more nice to be out during the first week of May when you sit under an oak tree and enjoy the sun. That's a lot more pleasurable.
But I do agree with you on the seasons. It does make for, personally, it makes for a much higher quality hunt the way it's set up now. It's really, I think, an excellent way to run the season. Well, we're talking with Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Writer Communicators Association, and Tim Isley, full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Wildlife Writers Roundup and the Ideas Network. Taking a look at nature and our Wildlife Writers Roundtable Spring 2020 program. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dean Bortz of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, and Tim Isley, also a full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. Great to have them with us. Thanks so much for listening in. We have a lot of callers online, so I think we are going to go back to the phones. And let's go to David in New Richmond next. Hi, David. Thank you so much for calling.
Hey, Larry. Say, there was a question on the Conservation Congress about a specific area. It was St. Croix County, and they wanted, the question was going to no bucks during the deer season. And I think with your one guest pointing out how important today's antlers are for everyone, I think the better option would be to treat our deer population like they do out west. And that would be that X amount of antlerless deer have to be registered before any bucks can be registered for that certain area. So I think that would really incentivize hunters to bag the antlerless deer in September through October, and then they'd have their buck time to hunt. And I also have a comment on your original raccoon question. Raccoons are very susceptible to distemper, especially localized. So their breeding season was February. For that to hit a population would be take about the amount of time that it is right now. And I did hear through the grapevine that the raccoon governor issued a stay in the den order. So I'll leave you with that one.
Okay. Oh, man. David, thanks so much. Well, you've got, you're right about the distemper, at least. But what about his thoughts about the way deer management is run in some parts of the West? I know you guys, most of you, maybe all three of you, have hunted out west and probably know about what he was talking about. Dean, maybe I can start with you.
Okay. I found it primarily in South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana, and I have not run across that particular management scheme. It sounds like it would probably work. It sounds fairly similar to Earn a Buck, although in the scenario by the caller, each individual would not have to kill a doe. You just need a certain number of does shot in that area in order for it to open up the bucks. I'm sure we could try it. I don't know why we couldn't try it.
Yeah. Pat, what do you think?
I'm wondering, too, if the caller was referencing the fact that the CDAC, the County Deer Advisory Committee up in St. Croix County, they're the only ones this year to recommend, initially anyway, an antlerless-only hunt this year. No buck hunting, period, you know, this fall. You know, it's the one option these CDACs have for managing the deer herd. But unfortunately, it's such a poison pill that no one, it'll never get through. I mean, it's been proposed in Waupaca County. It's been proposed in Door County, I believe. And, it comes up every now and then when these CDAC committees gets frustrated with the fact they have no tools to manage the herd. So they'll vote for antlerless hunting. And I know Buffalo County put it up there last year. But it always happens, as soon as they recommend that, the public goes wild, lawmakers go wild, and DNR backs down, and they don't do it. So it's really not really an option. It's just kind of a scare tactic. But it shows you the frustration that we're dealing with here on that issue. So I guess one of the things I've mentioned in my column a few times is, you know, one thing we've seen in the past decade here with Greg Kazmierski on the Natural Resources Board, you know, wiped out the fact that we used to have the either sex option in some of these, that like the holiday season hunt. And when you have the either sex option and not just antlerless hunting in that late season, it does get more people out there hunting. And then when they're out there hunting, if they see an antlerless deer, you know, they're more likely to, you know, shoot some of those deer. So there's other things we could be doing that have been taken off the table in recent years that I think we need to get back on the table and getting people, give them a good reason, one more little carrot to get them out there hunting.
Yeah, for sure. Colette, let's go to you in Eagle River. Colette, thanks for calling.
Thank you for reaching me. Well, I have a comment about the last one before I do mine on antlerless deer hunting. Up in Eagle River, I don't believe you can hunt doe as compared to buck, but there are so many does. I've never seen a buck this winter. We had up to 26 does in my yard. We could use a few less does. Then back to my question was on owls. We just moved up here in December full time, and we live across the street from a lake in, you know, a very rural part of Eagle River. And I've heard an owl call. I mean, I know barred owls who cooks for you, but I've never heard this one before. It's very loud. I only hear it at dusk to, you know, 9 o'clock, and it goes like this. It goes, ooh. I assume it's an owl. And ooh. And they call back and forth to each other, and there's no second note. It's just a loud trailing, you know, goes downhill. And I've checked all the websites, and they never show those as owls.
I think they might be right, but let's see. Dean Boritz, you're up in that area.
Sure. A couple of comments there. First thing I'd like to suggest is that Colette audition for The Voice. I think she'd have a good shot at getting through to the finals. That was a pretty good rendition of the owl call. I'm not an owl guy. One of the guys who writes for us, Al Cornell, is an owl guy. I wish we could call Al, and Al may even be listening. When she started out with her description, I thought it was going to be a screech owl, but that's not a screech owl. It could be a great gray. I don't know. I do use that when turkey hunting. I use the one long note. If the who cooks for you doesn't work, I'll go with the one long note. I don't know if the turkeys know the difference, but they do seem to react to it. As far as the deer stuff, in Vilas County, Eagle River's in Vilas County. when we're talking about, you know, including in this show here, where we're talking about how to control deer numbers in the state, we're talking primarily central, northeastern, southern Wisconsin. North central counties don't have the deer numbers that the rest of the state does. And there's a big disparity between in-town deer and big woods deer in northern Wisconsin. I don't know where Colette lives, but if she has that many deer in her yard, she might be closer to town. You get out of town, you're not going to see deer numbers like that. So it's a difficult, it's one of the CDAC's biggest problems in the north is how to balance, you know, those deer quotas when people in town are seeing a lot of deer and people like on the state forest, national forest, county forests aren't seeing that many deer and would prefer not to see antlerless deer shot. The other thing I'll mention is that Vilas County is a no bait, no feed county. So people do have to be careful about how they're, you know, it could be that a deer coming in and just cleaning up bird seed, which is, I'm sure, the case. But being that they're new to the area, Colette, her husband, might want to just keep an eye on that.
Pat or Tim, any ideas as to the call that we were hearing there from Colette?
I was going to agree. The thought in my mind, the first when she made that sound, was it sounded to me like a screech owl, because they start up high and they go down. But often, to me, it always sounds a little bit like a horse whinnying. And so I, you know, you'd have to hear it. But going up high and coming down low, because we know it's not. I don't think it's a great horned owl, you know, which is the deep hoo. And obviously the barred owl with a who cooks for you, who cooks for you all. And so I was thinking a screech owl. That was my guess, but I'm not sure.
And Colette, what you might do is go to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology website and type in screech owl, or just type in screech owl calls, and you may and see if the call resembles what you heard. I think you did a good job of doing a call for sure. And I've heard that call myself and wondered sometimes what it was, and it may well be a screech owl. So thank you very much for that call. TJ in Spooner, it's your turn. Hi, TJ.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I've got a couple comments. Number one, that caller, Colette, that could also be a call from a barred owl. They make a single note call like that. But what I wanted to say is I'm a retired DNR employee, and it worked way back when Earl and Bazadny and George Meyer were excellent DNR secretaries, and things have gone downhill a lot since then. The DNR needs to get, or the legislature needs to get their nose out of what the DNR does and maybe set some guidance, but not set laws and policies and rules and regulations. And we need to get back to science-based management in the DNR. And that is hurting our resources in the state greatly. I think that Pat Durkin is right on, and I hope he keeps bashing Kaczmierski. We need to get rid of that guy. And the rest of your visitors or guests today, Bortz and Isley, are doing a great job at that newspaper. So, guys, keep it up. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, that was a nice compliment on everybody there. Pat, comment?
Well, I appreciate that. And one thing, Larry, that, you know, we're all four of us here are not young people. And we can all remember it wasn't long ago when people in the Conservation Congress and regular day-in, day-out hunters and fishermen would go into the legislature at hearings and really caution them about getting involved in these things. And that should be the court of last resort for setting fish and wildlife regulations. And, you know, I remember times, and this is like the early 90s, where they would have a proposal come up from the legislature to make it to mandate a 9-day season, and you would see guys from the Conservation Congress, you know, our representatives, citizen representatives, show up in those hearings and tell the legislature that they might not like the idea of having a 16-day deer season or whatever the idea might be, but they certainly do not want the legislature mandating that stuff and putting it in the law. But now, in recent years, We saw it with Earnabuck. We saw it with these 9-day seasons by law. And once you make it law, it's very hard for any kind of – you can't do anything until the legislators go back and change it back and give the DNR that authority. Right now the DNR lacks authority in so many different areas of year-in, year-out, and day-in, day-out deer management.
Well, I
definitely agree.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Tim. I think, Larry, that TJ was right on the mark there. And the fact that the legislature has passed so many rules that take the ability of the DNR to manage the resources really hurts us. And I think it's up to the citizens of Wisconsin, the citizens, the sportsmen, and those even who don't hunt and fish. They have all got a voice. That's a resource because they belong to all of us. And I think they need to come out in force, you know, when it comes time to vote and contact their legislator, because these legislators are tying the hands of the DNR, to be honest with you.
There we go. Oh, you know what? Hold on to that thought, Tim. We're going to take a quick look at the news and weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us. And then we will be back with our three guests, Dean Bortz, Pat Durkin, and Tim Isley. You stay with us. Taking a look at nature and wildlife in Wisconsin today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Back with us, Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, and Tim Isley, a full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. Talking about a lot of topics on the show today. What questions or concerns do you have? Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And Tim, just to go back to you for a minute, you were finishing up a thought there when we broke for news.
Sure, Larry. I just was agreeing with what basically the point that TJ had made, where the legislature now is sticking its nose in to things in natural resources that in the past used to be handled by our Department of Natural Resources and based on science. And if you look at things like baiting and feeding or even Earnabuck and things that they've passed laws which took it out of the hands of the DNR, and even legislators were upset with some of the water regulations and things and basically eliminated positions so that we lost the Science Services Bureau before. And we used to have a Forestry Milk Act, which was a good way of supporting forestry, and they took that out in a way. And I think maybe in the future we're going to find with some of these cuts and reductions that it's going to affect some of the natural resources. So I just wish that people would be able to make it known to their legislators that they need to allow the science people at the DNR to basically run the agency
and do their jobs. Okay, Duane in Boulder Junction up next.
Larry?
Let's get sorry.
Larry, this is Dean. I just wanted to try to get one more follow-up in there on this whole thing.
Sure.
I would add to that, to what Tim said, the role of the Conservation Congress. No other state in the nation has the Conservation Congress. And if the legislators would just realize by the time any proposed rule gets through the Congress from the DNR and back to the DNR, it's been whipped, beat, kicked, and molded into what will work. And all the legislators have to do is review it and say, okay, let them go ahead. They don't have to bother themselves with that kind of – they can do other more important work. Sportsmen and the DNR have any hunting, fishing, trapping, water, forestry issue covered. And one other thing that TJ mentioned, I just want to maybe expand on it. He mentioned that he appreciated Patrick's bashing of Greg Kaczmierski. I want to address that just a little bit, because people may feel Pat or myself bash Greg. We don't bash him. What we're doing is reviewing his proposals, actions, objectively critiquing them. It's not our fault that Greg sets himself up like a bowling pin and gets knocked down. And I'm taking that from an old Grateful Dead song. In fact, I should probably get Greg that T-shirt. I'll get him that T-shirt for Christmas. But no, I mean, we take our jobs as journalists and reporters seriously. We're not out looking to bury somebody. But if there are issues and there are concrete reasons that, you know, or sources that we develop that tell us something differently, you know, we'll report that. And for us, Pat's doing it in a column form. So sometimes he can editorialize a little bit, but we're not looking out, going out and looking to bash anybody. And what we're doing is reporting what's happening. And in this case, Greg often sets himself up for critique, and it's not hard to call him on it. So,
well,
that's what I had to say on that one.
Okay, well put. Thank you, Dean. Now let's go to Duane in Boulder Junction. Duane, hello.
Well, good afternoon. Oh, how are you doing, Larry?
Just great. Thank you, Duane. I hope you're doing well, too. What's on your mind?
Well, first off, I have to agree with TJ over there in Spooner. I thought that was well put. Secondly, I thought you a book that somebody might have mentioned would be Sanconi Almanac. His chapters on spring in Wisconsin are timeless. And that's always a favorite book of mine any time of the year. To get on to a question, I'm up here in Vilas County, and it seems to me that we're struggling with the deer herd in terms of the number of bucks and the age structure of the bucks. And I often wonder why the Congress or the board doesn't propose or the DNR going to a one buck license. I think that would take some of the pressure off in terms of who's killing the deer. It doesn't matter what he dies from it, but it would certainly take the pressure off our bucks up here. And also, I was wondering what your folks there think about making Hunter's Choice available again for the CDACs. It was a good management technique, not necessarily statewide, but I think it's a technique that would work very well in a county like Vilas or Oneida. Just wondering what they think about the one buck and the Hunter's Choice. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Duane, for calling. Well, let's see. Pat, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, both those issues come up quite often, actually. The one thing I always go back to, Larry, is that if you look at the actual DNR has all this information, it's easier than ever for them to even print it out and show it to you. But the number of people who actually shoot two bucks in a given year or two deer in a given year is really small. I think only like 15% even shoot two deer, you know, period, either sex, buck or doe. And so, yeah, you know, people always want to go back to one buck per person, whatever it might be, but you could do that. But in the big picture, it's just not going to make a big difference. And we have, I think that the days of Hunter's Choice just aren't, it would work up north, but there's still enough flexibility in our current system to cover those kind of things. So I guess I don't see either as a real pressing need myself.
All right. Duane, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. We'll give Dan and Westby a chance to join in. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guys. Dan Small here. You guys are doing a great job, as always. I just thought I'd chime in on books suggested reading. And I'm sure you folks know these two authors, Dave Evenson, who edited a collection of Gordon McQuarrie stories that were from the, they're actually his columns from the Milwaukee Journal way back when, there goes my cell phone. the McQuarrie columns from the Milwaukee Journal, the first collection was called Right Off the Reel, and the second one kind of fits in with the mood you guys are creating with the raccoon, cougar, and the whole conversation there, Dogs, Drink, and Other Drivel. It's a great, great collection of stories that are really the precursors of some of the McQuarrie stories that were more polished when they appeared in magazines and then later in the series of books, Stories of the Old Duck Hunters and Other Drivel. So those two, and they're available from the Barnes Area Historical Association, which is bahamuseum.org. And all the proceeds go to support the Macquarie collection there and other efforts of the museum. And the other book by fellow outdoor writer Art Hawkins, or no, I'm sorry, Ken Blomberg, is called Letters from Art. And Art Hawkins was one of Aldo Leopold's graduate students, as you guys know, I'm sure. And it's a fascinating collection of letters back and forth between Leopold and Hawkins, and then between Hawkins and Blomberg, and including the story of the German short hair, Gus, that came from Hawkins to Art when, or to Aldo Leopold when Art Hawkins took a job out of state. Three great books that I'm sure you guys are familiar with, but anyone looking for more things to read this spring, if you're not out there turkey hunting, trout fishing, or in my case, tending newborn lambs, I'm too busy. I don't know how I worked when we were, not staying at home, because I'm just, I'm up to my ears with everything going on.
I've seen some of your lambs and some of your photos and videos, Dan, on my Facebook page. They're great to look at. And would you do me a favor and email that list to Jill Nadeau, my producer, and we'll put that up along with the others, other books.
And again, great work, guys. Keep it up.
All right. Dan Small with some suggestions as well. And Dan, of course, has been involved in outdoor communications pretty much his whole career and has done a wonderful job as well. So great to hear from him. Thomas in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering, my wife, who happens to be a nurse, we were having a discussion here about deer camp. And look at all the deer camps from up north where you have guys who meet from all over the state and Midwest, and you're living in a one-room area. Boy, if the virus is still around, that could have a big impact on the amount of deer getting shot. I don't know. Have you thought about that, Larry, up at your deer camp up in Bayfield, what you're going to do if it's still around? It? I'm sure it will be.
You know, I'm hearing you, and I'm thinking, Thomas, right. I hadn't thought about that. Wow. Well, Tim, what do you think?
Well, I think it's an interesting question, and I hadn't thought that far in advance myself, but I know, I think, you know, when people are together and certainly if you bunch of guys, I think it's going to be a concern. But if you can just have a couple of people, say, within the 6 to 10 feet apart and you're outdoors, otherwise, other than that, I'm hoping that would be something that we'll be able to do. And I think it's a good question. Again, how do you get outdoors, and what things eventually, if we can get to it, I'd like to mention some of these trips with the Natural Resources Foundation, some of the things they're doing, getting people outdoors and yet keeping people separate. So, but right now for the deer camp question, I think that may be a concern in the future. I'm just hoping that a lot of these things will have solved by then, but I don't.
Yeah, we might, my own group, there might be anywhere from 10 to 15 people in our cabin, so and there's a lot more like that especially in northern Wisconsin, I think, in north central Wisconsin. Dean, had that come across your line of thinking?
No, it sure hasn't. I've been thinking about a lot of other stuff, you know, getting ready for fishing season, boiling sap into syrup, and doing some turkey hunting and stuff. So I guess I would hope, or I was thinking that, you know, by the time we get to November, we don't need to worry about any of this anymore. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's going to run that long. I don't know. But I would sure hope it's over with by then.
You know, as part of our Why Wisconsin project, we receive a lot of questions about whether or not it's okay to go fishing in Wisconsin, and opening day is Saturday. So Lance had sent a question to Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin. That's the question answer area. Is it okay to go fishing on Wisconsin's fishing season opener on May 2nd? Are you guys going?
Absolutely.
What do you,
Yeah, absolutely. Go fishing.
There's no problems with that, as long as you're kind of observing the protocols. There should be no issues with that. And you can submit your questions or concerns about COVID-19 or anything else for that matter. Just go to WPR.org/COVID, and we'll do our best to answer those questions through Wisconsin, the Wisconsin project. So there we go.
Larry, maybe we should go a little bit further down that road, just to, you know, instead of just say, sure, go fishing, I could say that, you know, here in northern Wisconsin, I live up in the Minocqua area, all the boat landings are open. The DNR recreation crews are placing the fishing or the piers and docks for at the boat landing for people to launch with. You know, I mean, it's just anybody that I've talked to, Todd Kalish, the deputy DNR fish chief, you know, he's saying, yeah, everybody go, just follow, you know, the COVID-19 cautions, you know, social distancing, wear masks if you feel that they work, you know, but, you know, there's not a problem with going fishing. And I think even as long as the state parks that were closed, I think they're opening May 1st, so those boat landings will be open as well. So everything should be pretty well opened up for, as far as bait shops, I did talk to some bait shop owners. Some of them are at different levels of operation. So if somebody is traveling and going to an area and they're going to stop at a bait shop, maybe call ahead. Some are offering curbside service only, so call ahead with your order. They'll have it ready. Some are offering or allowing in-shop personal, you know, arrivals and appearances, but they're just asking people to come in, get what they want, and out, you know, not browsing. So there's different levels of that going on too. So people should call their bait shops and find out what's all working there.
Yeah, good information. Good information for sure. Tim, I want to go back to you because you were talking about you'd started to talk a little bit about some natural resources,
the
foundation events.
Right. It sort of came up. I was thinking, you know, with the deer camps and thinking about being outdoors, people want to be outdoors. And one of the best ways that people have a chance to get out and learn are through those Natural Resource Foundation field trips. They've had a whole bunch of scheduled, and unfortunately now, because they've had to cancel them during April and May, and there's some question whether they'll be available during June or not, but hopefully things will die down so that then later on in the summer they will still have these trips. But one of the things that they're doing, I mean, people are cooped up at home, they want to get outdoors, but they've got something now called some virtual field trips, which is sort of interesting. So people can go onto the website and they can take these virtual field trips. There's one that talked about kestrels and showed banding these little tiny fledgling kestrels, really interesting. So each Friday that they're having these virtual field trips, and then they got the Birdathon that's coming up, and these are money raisers for good organizations, and basically they've extended that into the fall. So, and people can go out and do their birding individually now. They can be on a team, but they can do that individually. So there's lots of opportunities for getting outdoors, and by abiding by the restrictions. The Wisconsin Wetlands, they've got a Wetlands on Wednesday, and if you go onto their website, you can get watch a tour of a wetland, some of those things, and the Perth Enthusiasts have fields coming up, and we're going to have to find out if those are going to be held or not, or what the restrictions are, but there's so many opportunities to get outdoors and learn, and I think it's all about lifelong learning, and so people should check those websites out, because there's really some good opportunities still.
Very good points. I've been on some of those tours and of the foundation, and they're always fabulous. But I haven't done the online.
Yeah, and they've got great leaders. When you look at some of the naturalists, the ecologists, Rich Henderson, Dave Sample, Randy Hoffman, these people, Thomas Meyer, these are all good ecologists, and you learn so much. It's really fun going out on the tours. It really is.
It absolutely is. Well, let's take, maybe we have time for another call. Mark in Baraboo, your turn. Hi.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, well, with the DNR having shut down prescribed burning this season, what do you folks see as being some of the fallout from that, as far as the problems with invasive plants and habitat restoration and even reducing tick populations?
Hmm. Well, Dean, you care to comment?
Sure. It's going to be like just about anything else. I mean, we're going to be stocking fewer pheasants this fall because the pointed game farm, you know, isn't operating at the level it normally does. It's going to all be catch-up work. They're going to have to do it, you know, if they can do any burning this fall, they'll have to do it then, or they'll have to add to their load next spring. You know, sure, it's not great that it's not getting done now, but there isn't much anybody can do about it. They're just going to have to add it to their workload down the road.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately, that is the case. You mentioned maple syrup earlier, and you're a sap catcher, so to speak.
Yeah, I do it about every 2 or 3 years, and we're working on an on-year for us. And so, yeah, we've been tapping, collecting, boiling. We're on our third boil for this spring, and we should actually be done this afternoon. I think we had about 31, 32 gallons left to boil down. We'll probably end up with about 6 or 7 pints of syrup by this evening.
And total pints?
Let's see, that would then give us about 28 to 30 pints. We did three different batches. That's one thing about this, the work at home thing has helped us. We were able to collect during the day as the bags filled and kept the boil going and just kept working right on through.
Well, on that happy note, I want to thank you guys for once again taking the time to be with us today. It's always such a pleasure for me to be able to talk to the three of you. And, you know, we do this a few times a year, and I'm going to already be looking forward to our next visit. Thank you so much. Dean.
It's always a pleasure, Larry. You bet.
Patrick Durgan.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Tim Isley, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Larry. Get outdoors, people.
Yeah. Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. Pat Durgan, freelance writer, editor, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. And Tim Isley, full-time freelance outdoor writer and photographer. I certainly didn't get to all the things on my list. Maybe you didn't either, but we'll have them back and we will do this all over again. Tomorrow we'll talk to a travel industry expert about what you can do if your travel plans have been put on hold. And Jerry Apps comes by to talk about writing your memoirs of recent events. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.